Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
We begin with Harry Kim reaching Voyager in the escape pod. He tells Captain Janeway that B'Elanna Torres is lost. We continue to the point where they discover a piece of the Delta Flyer. After that...
It's simple. They search for B'Elanna Torres. B'Elanna Torres is found.
Or not found.
Or not found. The end. Sounds pretty straightforward to me.
That's exactly the problem. Where's the mistaken identity? The discovery, the sudden reversal. Mistaken identity. A character who was someone else. Discovery. The moment when that identity is revealed. Reversal. A situation that turns from good to bad in a blink of an eye.
Dan, why don't you start the podcast?
Oh, hey, guys. Hey.
Hey.
Hey, Jesse, what's your name?
My name's Jesse.
Right
what's
on.
Your name?
We don't do names. We never do names.
Hey, well, you asked me to start. This is how I'm starting.
Okay, fair point. Yep. I thought you were going to start with like a funny voice.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Patrick.
Yeah.
Hey, Jesse.
Hey, what?
What are you doing? Your name?
What are you doing?
Hey, Patrick.
I like the, you've been workshopping this. You've added a few words to the to your repertoire for
like
this particular
four.
Voice.
What?
You used to only be able to say,
hey Patrick,
Jesse.
What's your name?
You couldn't even say, hey, Patrick, properly.
No.
And now that I've called you out on it, if you try it again, you'll probably mess it up. Try it.
Hey, Patrick.
Oh, good job.
What are you doing and what's your name?
I'm sitting here on a podcast, and you already said my name. My name is Patrick.
Yeah, and my name is Dan, and this is the It's Got Star Trek. This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
It's good. You're shifting into a different voice.
I know.
Now, but
I'm
it's still a good
into,
one. It's
I'm shifting into
one.
The this is Notepad Plus Plus voice.
It's the It's Got Star Trek.
That's your famous right. Notepad Plus Plus character.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite characters. You don't do that character on the podcast very often.
I wrote it all on Notepad Plus Plus.
Is that how you wrote your algorithm? Or did you use some sort of developer environment?
I'm standing in the doorway voice.
I used to use Notepad Plus Plus to write programs, but now I use Visual Studio Code, which is really just a fancy text editor.
Yeah, because it makes different colors for the different commands and business. And
yeah,
all that.
It's got a lot more variety and extensions. A lot
That's
more
great.
Capability than Notepad Plus Plus.
That's good. It's
but
good
if you
to
really want to go
forward.
Out there, a lot of people like one called Rider. I've never used Rider.
Okay.
I still don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think Rider's a proper ID. I think VS Code is just a text editor.
Is it Rider or Writer?
A Rider, R-I-D-E-R.
R-I-D-E-R, not R-Y-D-E-R?
Yeah, Ritter is German for Rider.
Yeah. Interesting. VS Code is a text editor that has the feel of an IDE. I guess you could technically call it an IDE. I don't know.
Yeah. Integrated development environment.
Boom.
Hey. Okay. Keep going. Keep launching us on this podcasting journey.
All right. Well, this is
It's Got Star Trek.
This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. I'm Dan, and that's Jesse, and over there is Patrick.
Right. Over where?
There.
Repeated this.
All right. And today, this is
already?
Episode number 279.
No, that can't be right.
You're stating that number for comical effect. Although it's not that comical because it's not that far off.
Boom.
It would be funny. Like you should have said like
250. You said it like 69.
250.
Yeah, 69. 253.
No.
279 to one.
It's a 30. We're in the 30s.
234.
That close.
Three.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is episode 233. Don't worry, we can cut all that out. This is episode number 233 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast, and today we are doing a Voyager episode, okay. Star Trek Voyager, season 6, episode 22, called... It's not called The Muse. It's called The Muse. It's called Muse.
Yes. Not to be confused with Star Trek Deep Space Nine's The Muse, mm-hmm. which is an episode I'm not a fan of. I think it's one of the poorer entries in the Deep Space Nine canon.
Yeah, well, I guess we won't talk about that one.
Well, I mean, if the algorithm pops it up, we may have no choice but to talk about it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Because we got to do whatever Dan's algorithm tells us each and every week, except next week. But we'll get to that in a bit. All right. Anything else? What's the next thing, Dan? What about our Patreon? If people are interested in our Patreon, what should they do?
You go to...
People on the Patreon.
You go to www.itsgotstartrek.patreon.
No. Okay. It was a good guess, and you know what? Honestly, perhaps we should facilitate such a redirect. Now that I'm thinking about it, but no, you want to give it another try?
Patreon.itsgotstartrek.content.com.co.uk.
No,
I give up.
It's patreon.com/itsgotstartrek.
Oh, I was so close! I should have guessed that.
I agree that you should. You should have guessed that.
Oh, man.
But that's they can go check out some cool content. And, you know, there's free previews and there's some free content up there as well. So check it out. There's some tomfoolery and silliness there. Some of it's related to Star Trek. Some of it isn't. So stuff to enjoy.
Yeah.
Stuff to enjoy there.
Overall enjoyable.
All right. So
nicely done.
Yeah. So that's that's Patreon. What do we need to explain to people about what's happening on April 4th and then April 8th.
There is a new season of a show we like called Discovery. It's coming on the TV.
It's making me feel very awkward. I mean, you've got a nice voice, I gotta say.
No, it's okay. I'm confident in myself. I don't need the approval
of others. It's something in the cadence that makes me discomforted. Well, you've added a little bit more shoulder wiggle there, which gives it a different flavor.
I've been visited by inspiration herself.
Okay. On April 4th, Discovery Season 5, the fifth and final season of Discovery, starts. And on April 8th is when you will hear our discussion of the first episode.
Yes!
That aired on April 4th. So that's something to look forward to. And in addition to that, in order to prepare, while usually we would rely on Dan's algorithm, next week we wanted to prepare and get into the Discovery mood by discussing four of the Discovery-related short treks.
Ooh.
And not a moment too soon.
Yes. So those will be Runaway, Calypso, The Brightest Star, and The Girl Who Made the Stars. So those are the ones that are the one mainly associated with Discovery. There is, of course, The Escape Artist, but we already discussed that in, I think it was episode 89 of IGST.
We totally did that one.
This podcast.
Sippin' Jippers.
Sippin' Jippers on a beach somewhere. And plus, that's not very super, it's in the Discovery time period, but it's a little bit disconnected from the actual story. But I thought, we thought it would be fun to review these short treks and get a little bit character flavor as we go into the last season.
So character flavor.
Character flavor. That's what we're going to be doing next week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No emails this week. No emails this week.
Not even a fake email?
No fake emails. No real emails.
Surprised.
I am.
But we can do chat-em-ups.
Oh, chat-em-ups. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, Jesse, did anything...
Chat-em-ups.
Did anything interesting happen to you recently?
Oh, man. This is really digging. Scraping the bottom.
An answer in the format that is, would be appropriate on, say, like a late night talk show. Sort of like a brief anecdote. Something that's mildly engaging, but not too controversial.
An inefficient plan.
I was going to leave the house this morning, and I couldn't find my keys, and I looked everywhere, and I was like...
It was the last place you looked.
Where
could
my keys be? And my keys were in Natalie's car, and she had driven away with them. She had to come back and give me my keys.
Oh, well, I'm glad that resolved itself.
Go on.
And then, I had my car keys, and I went to my car, but then I had to get back into my house, and I had taken my house keys out of my backpack, and they were on the floor in my house. I couldn't get back in my house, so I had to call Natalie again. To give me my fucking get me into the house so I can get my fucking keys.
Oh,
go on, I'm a
fucking idiot.
Go on.
I gotta say that is.
And that's my anecdote.
That's some turmoil. That was today.
That was just this morning.
Wow. Yes.
I almost believed you.
And now you're here podcasting.
I barely,
you're making
barely
that up.
Made
couple
it
of,
over.
With a couple of goofballs.
Barely made it over here.
You made that up.
A couple of goofballs.
No, I didn't. I did not make that up.
Well, how about you, Dan? How about you, Dan? Did you have any recent anecdotes? Cats do anything cute, or you encounter anybody like in a
Pepper threw up the other day.
Pepper is one of your cats?
Yeah, she threw up the other day. Yeah.
Did this concern you, or was it just sort of inconvenient?
It was more just inconvenient, but she has a sensitive stomach. This is really scraping at the bottom of it.
No, it's the Chat-em-ups. just trying out a new feature.
A
Chat-em-ups.
New feature.
That's a good story.
Don't people want to talk to us about Star Trek?
I had to get back into the house because Iris wanted some bunny snacks.
Oh, bunny snacks.
Yeah.
And she was like, she had to have them like right then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the car.
No, Dan, we're going to talk about Star Trek.
I was like, I'll turn back and get some bunny snacks. And I was like, oh no.
Like, you oh, can't. No. That's good stuff right there. The bunny snack anecdote, you know, it endears us to the audience.
Yeah, I thought it would make it cuter if I.
Other people will be like, I like bunny snacks too.
We need to be relatable. People need to be able to relate to us so they can have a connection with
it's
us.
Those
so
little
they feel
fruit
like they
snacks
know us.
That, that are shaped like bunnies. It's from Annie's or whatever.
I got into a little thing last night as a
go on.
Yeah. And, you know, it's nothing big. It's not like the end of the world type stuff, but it was tense for a few minutes because I was at the mall.
Oh, no.
And I was in the Barnes & Noble.
Oh, shit.
And I stayed in there. Like, they were like, it was like 9:50 and they got on the announcement. They're like, attention shoppers, it is 9:50. Barnes & Noble will be closing in 10 minutes. Actually, I think it was like...
At Tyson's?
Yeah. Maybe, no, it was 8:50. It was 8:50 Eastern time. And then
that's the time
and then at 8:55 they came on and said, like, and the guy was like fucking stern. He was like, it's shoppers, it is 8:55. Barnes & Noble, we'll be closing the gates.
Can you still get a coffee?
In 5 minutes.
Don't be afraid.
No coffee, no nothing. And I was in there and I was like hanging out near the entrance.
Like, I'm reading a book,
I wasn't leaving. Some people were about to come in and the cashier guy ran out. He's like, hey. We're closing in 2 minutes.
Yeah, I know. That guy has to go home. Dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I decided not to push my luck, so with about a minute left, I just left.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't want to be like the asshole who's going to be there right at 9.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not
it's been done before.
The Indiana Jones thing sliding under the under the gate as it...
Because
nobody
know,
wants to be that down. Asshole that stays... Well, actually, a lot of people don't even it. A lot of people don't even consider it.
Those people have problems.
And I was figuring if they lock you in, maybe you're just there all night.
You have an exciting night at the mall.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the Barnes & Noble.
Because if you work in a store, the whole last hour of being open, like, you don't want anybody to come in. Like, somebody comes in and you're just like, motherfucker, what are you?
All right.
I was just going to continue the story about Pepper. She has she has a sensitive stomach and she's been a little under the weather, but she had blood work recently and all her levels are back to normal again. So when she does throw up, she's always had a sensitive stomach and thrown up from time to time. This recently, so when she throws up now, I always keep an eye out for her because of her sensitivity, but mostly it's just kind of like, yeah, you just kind of got to clean it up.
That's good. That was a good anecdote. It trailed off a little bit at the end. Overall, it was a pretty
good anecdote. I just don't want people to think that like I was more concerned with cleaning my carpet than the health of my cat.
No,
I'm very
of course
concerned
not.
About the health of my cat. But cats throw up, and they just do,
they do that.
They just fucking throw up.
It's
sometimes.
A thing they do, and that's definitely something people out there in the audience can identify.
So those were our...
Sometimes you wake up in the morning, you step right in it, and you're like, what did I step in?
Yeah, right. Oh, gross. So wake up in the morning and the something.
Good chat-em-ups.
I don't think I will make up on time.
By the time
I grab my books and I give myself a look at the corner.
it's all right, because I'm saved by the bell. I never understood that. I don't understand how the bell saves
you. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Because my understanding is that the term "saved by the bell"
is
a box. No, isn't the "saved by the bell" a boxing term where they be like you don't get the shit kicked out of you anymore because they ring the bell and they end the fight.
Yeah.
And but like in the context of a school. For the show Saved by the Bell, it was about the bell ringing, and it's like the bell rings at the same time every day, so he wasn't late.
In school, the bell rings, and then they start kicking the shit out of you. That's how school works.
You will learn. You will become a model citizen, a compliant model citizen.
Right. Like, it wasn't like he was trying to last until the bell rang. He was trying to get somewhere before the bell
rang. Didn't make any sense.
So the he would have been saved by the
lack. He was a rascal, that Zach.
He would have been saved by the lack of a bell if for some reason it didn't ring that day and he was late. He would have been saved by lack of bell because it would have meant he wasn't late. But then the teacher would have just been like.
You're saying lack of bell, not Lake Bell, the actress.
I'm saying lack of bell.
Just to clarify. I figured you were.
But then the teacher probably would have still been like, hey, man, I don't care that the bell didn't ring. Like, you're late.
Hey, man. I'm a teacher. Hey, man.
Well, because there were always those teachers that were like, I don't hear the bell. The class is over when I say it.
Exactly. So, okay. Chat'em ups. That was good.
That was a good chat'em ups.
If you would like us to not do chat'em ups in the future, send us an email.
Send us a topic to
or
discuss.
A voicemail. You can send us an email at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. That's feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
Here's another chat'em up. My Amazon Prime subscription ran out, and I'm considering, and I haven't renewed it yet. So I'm going to see how
considering
long.
Building bombs.
So wait, no. I want to make it very clear that was nowhere in my mind did I ever consider such a thing. Just so we're clear.
I'm just playing. It's edgy. It's an edgy podcast.
It's been a strange couple of weeks.
I'm looking forward to discussing that episode.
So I'm going to see how life is without Amazon for a while. If I can't last more than a week, then I'll get it again. But like, you know, I don't want to. I mean, I think I can last longer than a week. It's not like I'm addicted to fucking Amazon Prime. Which
well, we'll
is why
find
I think,
out.
Maybe I'll just start ordering from Walmart.com instead.
They don't have any good shows. So.
Yeah.
Walmart.com.
Walmart.
I think he was talking about Amazon.com.
Oh, Amazon.
You get like a pumpkin
pie. We'll update you in the future. We'll keep an eye on this. Dan Amazon.
Maybe so. Situation. It'll be interesting because I'll be forced to look around the web for different like storefront digital storefronts to see if, as opposed to actually going to a store. Because like I have tried to
that
go.
Sucks.
I have tried to go to fucking stores to buy shit, and they never have what I want anymore.
I went to
Target and I was looking for some shit, and they didn't have it. So I was like, okay, I guess I have to go to Amazon.
I know.
It's like I tried, guys.
I was trying to get a water filter.
I tried Target. I tried to go.
And I tried to order on Amazon.
Support Target.
I couldn't figure out which one to get. And I was like, the grocery store doesn't have it. And I don't know what to get on Amazon.
Are you gonna do that and then become one of those people that's all like feels all like noble that they're not that they're like I had to look at 5 websites.
Yeah, of course. I'm gonna like tell you about my plight. All
I read 6 newspapers every day.
All right, so feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
My life is so difficult. I had to go on all sorts of websites
or,
to find my shit.
If you want to leave us a voicemail, itsgotstartrek.com/record. Okay, Star Trek Voyager.
Okay, let's do it.
Muse.
I want you guys not to worry because
Belana's on it.
And she is.
You know, that caught me off guard, and it shouldn't have. I should have expected Belana's on it.
I should have thought about that.
I'm getting better.
This is a good Belana episode. I like this episode.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. It's not perfect, but I enjoyed it.
Belana Taurus, Voyager, Dilithium. Finally, young Harry Kim.
I like the Greek chorus. The Greek chorus reading Starfleet logs, essentially.
Captain's log.
This is a great
Stardate 538-96.
So
I was so confused for the first 10 seconds of the episode. I was like, what is this creepy shit? And then I was like, okay, I get what's going on here.
So the thing is, this is one of those episodes, and you see this a lot in television, movies, etc. When the plot when it's a writer writing about writing or an actor acting about acting, it can be tricky.
Yes.
Because sometimes it's like,
what about when you're
it's a little too
dancing about architecture?
Well, that I couldn't, that
would it
to
be,
me, that seems sufficiently differentiated
would it fall
to,
under the
to have some merit.
Would it fall into the category of a hat on a hat quite?
I don't know if it's a hat on a hat, but it is sort of like, okay, here's the thing. It can risk being too twee. Right, just a little bit too like I get you're the puppet master blah blah blah, you're writing about writing and you're acting about alternatively, even if it's well done, sometimes it can undermine your enjoyment because the pattern you know what they're doing, and so they have to follow a specific pattern, and then so you can be like, oh, is this gonna be? It takes some of the excitement out of
it. Well, it was kind of.
I don't think that happened here.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting to hear like the story of Voyager as from the perspective of those people. What was interesting is it was at one point he was all talking about Vulcans. He was like,
that's what it is to be Vulcan.
Yeah. about like how your heart's breaking right. secretly.
Know,
and
great.
There was something like really spot on about like that.
I know it was.
And then he was talking about Chakotay and Janeway making out.
Yeah.
And like
he was shipping them.
And you know, obviously, I mean, there was an episode where they were on that planet with each other, and there's always been sexual tension between Chakotay and Janeway. I don't know if you can. I mean, I'm sure a bunch of people tell me I'm wrong, but I feel like there's always
a little bit. Yeah.
I think he's well known. Not everyone's a fan of it. I'm kind of not a fan of it because I don't like Chakotay.
It's kind of interesting that like he kind of drew this information about from the logs and what he was listening. So it was interesting to see the perspective. I think why it worked is because you have one type of culture like that's very advanced in a certain way, and this other culture that you know is like. You know, this other, whatever you want to call it, but like seeing it from a different perspective, I thought that was an interesting.
That's the gimmick, and it's a really clever gimmick that works out very well. I think I think they pull it off. I think there's a lot of risk with that gimmick because if you really kind of pull back the curtain a little bit, this episode's not saying much.
No,
there's not really much moral comment. It's the charm of seeing Voyager's story through a different perspective.
Yeah.
But that's very impactful. Mm-hmm. And it does make you think about the characters you know and love and all that other stuff.
And that's sort of like, you know, this is like from the golden age of Star Trek. And that's like a, you know, that when they were really hitting, doing well, that like, that's the kind of thing they could pull off.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
They sort of like, I was trying to look at the episode structure in terms of like, okay, this whole, thing he was talking about, it was a...
Where's the mistaken identity? The discovery, the sudden reversal.
Now, first of all...
He's doing Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey.
Right, that's right. And I haven't read that, but I've heard bits about what it is, and I was... Yeah. And it doesn't...
People implicitly understand how
it is. But like, it doesn't exactly mirror what Joseph Campbell is saying. They're using their own sort of terminology.
Isn't
it more like Hero's Journey, isn't that?
They call it the Hero's Journey.
Which is different than what this guy's
saying.
It's
important to note that Joseph Campbell didn't invent this.
No, it's not. No,
Joseph Campbell was.
He kind of put it into words.
He articulated it really well. And the other thing is everybody, including Joseph Campbell, in literature studies and myth studies, would say that the hero's journey is not the only way to tell a story.
No.
It is a common and prominent one. Well, and especially often associated with some sort of like older forms of storytelling.
So, right. And so and obviously this whole like mistaken identity discovery reversal, that's based upon like established sort of like story structures that have been come across. But I've never heard it put in those specific words before. So I was trying to look at the episode in terms of that. I guess the mistaken identity, because this episode, of course, has to have its sort of like looking at itself here.
Exactly. And it's very meta.
It skirts the
edges of being a little ridiculous, but I think it stays within the boundaries.
So the mistaken identity would be everyone thinks B'Elanna is some traveler from somewhere else, except
they think that B'Elanna is not in fact on it.
No, but actually she is on it because one time she said
B'Elanna's on it.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I got there.
Did you?
I don't know.
Did you really?
First of all, why didn't they didn't seem to question her forehead, you know? It's a weird sentence.
Well, did you see their foreheads?
Everybody wants prosthetic foreheads on their real heads.
They might be giants.
What were you saying, Jesse?
Well, did you see their foreheads?
Yeah, they had nose heads, though. They had like nose crown, nose bridges.
Nose bridges.
I don't think we heard a name for these people.
There was Jaina.
We heard names. We heard personal
names.
Which I liked. I thought that this was a slightly more mature form of Star Trek storytelling why would they even necessarily have a name for themselves in that sort of the Star Trek convention?
So wait, back to that. So that the B'Elanna with the different forehead that nobody questioned, that was a mistaken identity. The discovery was when Lena sort of figured out that
you keep using the term discovery. Is it because discovery is coming back on air
maybe that's why I'm doing it. Maybe that's also just what the words they use.
Could be coincidence.
It could be a coincidence. Maybe we watched this episode.
I watched you watch it. I mean, I didn't. That's a Pulp Fiction reference, as we all know.
We did this episode because they use the word discovery in it. And
you
we're watching.
So?
So next week we have to do an episode that talks about discovery too. No, we're already doing it. Yeah, that we win.
We're good.
So
we're doing the short tracks.
The discovery is that Lena discovers B'Elanna isn't, a traveler from another place. Wouldn't you say that's the discovery?
Well, she is a traveler from another place, but she's not from.
She's not a poet.
Yeah, she ain't what this other guy is making her out to be.
And by the way, they're calling themselves poets, but they're really like playwrights or storytellers. But poets, I guess, is all
they're just
the same
being thing. Pretentious.
Yeah, they're just being pretentious.
This episode is about a planet full of pretentious people.
And the reversal,
one sect of which is led by Budget Andy Richter.
The reversal is Kellis doesn't want B'Elanna to leave, but she has to, and that's bad for Kellis, right? But then she's like, "You can do it, Kellis." And somehow that means Kellis can continue to be inspired on his own from here on out.
He's making up stories, I guess.
She like the whole reversal was Kellis not believing in himself and her saying you can do it. Because there was nothing, like, who's to say Kellis, because he's going to have to keep coming up with stories week after week.
And he's not going to be able to repeat that beaming special effect.
No, he's not. So he's really set the bar too high.
She kind of fucked him with that.
Yeah, so we never get to really figure it. We never find out how he's able to continue the stories other than B'Elanna's just like, you can do it. It's in here. You don't need me. And he's like, oh, I guess I don't. Our stories will continue. So I didn't think there was a really good resolution for like how he continued making stories.
Yeah, I think, you know, the end doesn't 100% come together.
But that would have been the reversal where her leaving, I think, would have been the reversal where her leaving would have been a disaster. And then, or maybe the reversal is that the play, also because like they couldn't, he didn't have an ending for the play. That could also be another reversal. And then they did have the ending.
That was
B'Elanna.
One of the things where it was getting, I appreciated it for what they were doing, but it was starting to get bump up against the borders of being a little twee, where it's like, I'm a playwright, but I haven't thought of the ending yet, but we're still going to put the show on.
Right.
I'll come up with the ending before the end of the show.
Yeah, I was wondering how often has that actually happened where somebody, the play hasn't been done by the day of.
I bet never.
Yeah, right.
People are like, yeah, it's delayed. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
It's canceled. It's not, whatever. It's just not happening.
Right.
It worked. It worked because you bought into these characters, even though you had Budget Andy Richter playing the asshole warlord guy.
Oh yeah, that guy.
Stoney Westmoreland.
You had Budget F. Murray Abraham, who was one of the people in the play, you know, the older guy. Not the old man. There was like a wise old man, but there was the guy who was like the main guy kept talking to. I didn't catch the main guy's name. What was the main guy's name?
Kellis.
Kellis, because the Kellis and his Kellis, girlfriend and colleague.
Wait, are you talking about the dude?
Is are you talking is about Lena?
Are you talking about
Kelly
the
Waymer?
Are you talking about Kelly the Murray Abraham guy? Was he this guy?
Find the truth of your story.
No.
Tommy Amendola.
Oh wait,
that's the old guy.
Was he this guy? Was it this guy?
Our patron has been insulted by his enemy to the north.
Yeah, I think it was that guy.
Do you think that's a weird delivery? He pauses in the middle.
Our patron has been insulted by his enemy to the north.
He's tired. He's a little really tired.
Oh, he must have just been running, yeah.
He was just smoking some cigarettes, I think.
Back. Yeah. That's what they do.
Yeah. But they had really cool little amphitheater type thing.
In the future, it blows their mind that people used to smoke cigarettes. In the future, they're like, humans used to destroy themselves with cigarettes.
In which future?
In all the Star Trek futures.
I liked in Fifth Element.
Although
they had like the big filter and the little tiny.
Oh yeah,
tiny
that was pretty good. And wait, didn't they have like death sticks in like was that
which, in Star Wars? In
Attack of the Clones.
Right.
Right. Would you want to do a Star Wars podcast? Switch it up and just start doing a Star Wars podcast.
Not really. I like Star Wars, but like
maybe we should do one as a surprise.
You want to talk about Star Wars?
About Star Wars, and you don't want to talk about like everybody would expect us to talk about Star Trek,
the Acolyte or something.
Talking about something else,
we could talk about like one of those animated Star Wars series that I've never seen.
Right.
I hear they're good.
Yeah, but I hear that as well. Yeah.
Would you want to do the podcast without seeing it?
Just like what we imagine it's like?
Like reading the website, the Wikipedia summary.
I thought this plot turn was really a mistake. They shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Or just how about like if you watch it but without sound?
Okay.
Can we do that?
Yeah. That'd be kind of interesting.
Watch it and listen to a Star Trek episode.
Oh, no. How about this? Dan, you watch it without sound. Jesse you watch it. You listen to it without watching it. I'm just not involved.
I thought you were going to say you got to do both. No.
He's going to come in and turn on the recording.
I'll watch the show, but you know, I wouldn't want to color. Well,
the whole gimmick
is
we'll be telling you about the episode.
You can regale me with. You can tell me. That's exactly right. Yeah. You can narrate the episode. You can act it out to me, and see how much I get. Then I have to answer a quiz at the end.
Oh man, you have to answer a fucking quiz.
Yeah, I'm sure that'd be very entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we never found out. Also, the Autark, like he was still pretty much an asshole by the end of the episode.
Was that the name of his I think that leader, the Autark,
It was yes, the patron. He was a patron, but he was the Autark.
I think he was listed as warlord in the credits.
Well, in Chakotea.net, it says he was the Autark, and they called him the Autark.
I believe you, and I recall vaguely.
Autarks in Warhammer are renowned for their strategic brilliance, sublime martial skill, and indomitable strength of will. I don't know if that has any. Autark LLC, comprehensive investigation, invention, mechanics support both super detectives and super geniuses. Oh, whatever. Yeah, Autark Wiktionary, Autark, a despotic ruler. That sounds about right. Yeah, autocracy, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So autocrat.
Autocrat.
So he was the he was a patron and the Autark. I don't know why they gave him two names, but he was presumably still an asshole by the end of the episode, right? Like, there's nothing.
Yeah,
that,
he was still there.
And then, do you notice at the end when he was like, he was all pissed off walking into the thing? He like shoved one of the soldiers. One of his soldiers with those big dumb box can heads. Those helmets were amazing.
But what's funny is like he shoves those guys out of the way, and like before Kellis even says it or whatever, one of those guys was like, he's here and he's not in a good mood.
Right.
That sort of nonsense, which is so funny.
Yeah, he was way into that. He was way into the play, though. He was
I'm still confused as to, I don't know why they didn't just hire actual Andy Richter. I think it would have worked better. This guy wasn't bad, but Andy Richter, I think, has more range. But I'll give the guy credit. At the end, they did show him being moved by the play.
Right.
Right. Yeah. He had a weird little look where he's like, you know what? Maybe I am the asshole.
Right.
And then he got on Reddit and he went to that Reddit, am I the asshole thing? And And everyone's like, they're like, yeah, you are the asshole. Because if you post something, by the way, if you post on the am I the asshole subreddit, if you post something, you are the asshole.
You're the asshole. Yeah.
Right. Literally all of them.
Yeah.
All of them, you're very clearly the asshole.
Right. If you're that upset, if you care that much about it, if you're questioning yourself that
well,
much.
Well, it is time for a break.
I almost believed you.
So we're gonna
week.
We're gonna take.
I want to see more of these Voyager Eternals. Nicely done.
That was the Autark.
When we come, that was all. That
I
was all.
Hear more about Sam.
When we come back,
I want to hear more about Sam.
When we come back, we have a brief fun 'em up. Or what do we call them? Second break, fun them up, whatever.
I don't know what you call them.
Waste them up.
Oh, yeah. they don't sound on the rad to me though.
No, this I think you'll enjoy. Okay, we'll be right back.
Supper is over.
Nah.
All right, we are back.
I knew you'd come.
Yeah, okay.
I told you not to come back. I followed you here expecting to find a love nest.
That we should note, because it is of note, that the character of Lena was played by Kelly Waymire.
I've seen her before.
Who would later play Ensign Elizabeth Cutler on Star Trek Enterprise.
She was on an episode of Seinfeld also.
And she, very sadly, in 2003, Kelly Waymire died of a brain, or no, of an arrhythmia, I think. Something with the heart.
That sucks.
Yeah, I know. It was really sad because she was this great character on Enterprise. She had a long, not long, but, you know, a recurring role where she was kind of hanging out with Phlox and,
She was
a crewman, so it was an interesting
perspective. She was the one that Phlox all, like, started hanging out with and he all liked her and stuff.
Yeah, they kind of, like, a little romance, a little friendship, and it was fun to see those conversations between them. Her role in this episode is not nearly so significant, but I thought she's really engaging. There's something about her, about her delivery, and she's a great actor, but also there's something about her delivery that I think is really charming.
And the viper in her nest.
Yeah.
Even though in this episode she was reduced somewhat to a jealous, vengeful person, you know?
Surprised.
Yeah. Well, okay, so...
And I told you not to.
For a quick fun-em-up, just a swift one, a quick one.
Say nothing,
you had mentioned,
or you too will be assimilated.
You mentioned earlier, Dan, about how at the end, this guy, Kellis, is his name, right?
Kellis? Yeah, Kellis.
He's all about, like, I'll be able to do more of these stories, and the stories, I love Voyager. Basically, the guy is a fan of the show Voyager, and so he wants to do more episodes of Voyager. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to ask you all, what do you think the next episode of Voyager he's going to do? Like, B'Elanna, she's gone. Voyager's continuing on their journey. He needs
B'Elanna's
to,
on
he
it.
He needs to do another episode. Are you
talking about an episode of Voyager that has not been created yet?
No. Pick an episode of Voyager.
Has he been back?
Huh?
Are you saying he's been back to an episode and we have to guess what episode he's been back?
The one with the Irish people in the holodeck.
See, I think Jesse gets what I'm saying here. What I'm saying is Kellis has declared that he plans to put on more Voyager stories.
Oh!
Because he likes the TV show Voyager. So there's all these episodes of Voyager that he can pick from.
He's going to start calling it Voyager.
Which episodes of Voyager would you like to see him do, whether you think it'd be good or ridiculous? What do you think he's going to do next? Hmm. I think he's going to do Threshold, with the one with the salamanders. I would just love to see him act out Threshold with that whole company of players acting out Janeway and Tom Paris making salamander babies.
Salamander babies.
Jesse thinks it's going to be, which one you said, what, Fairhaven or the other one?
Spirit Folk.
Spirit Folk is the other one. Yeah.
Spirit. Some people fear it.
We combined them.
Yeah, we did both of those episodes.
Remember that song of Ghostbusters 2? It was like, spirit, some people feel it, some people hear it. Spirit, some people just won't go near it. Was
that the end credit song?
I think so.
Was Ghostbusters 2?
I think it was Ghostbusters 2. Then I don't know if that was the same one that Bobby Brown did where he was like, and you have to, don't have to take control. Gotta take control.
Isn't that a different song?
Wasn't that the song that played during the movie? When they were using a Nintendo joystick to control the statue.
Oh, I was so into that when they used that joystick. I was like, whoa. That song, the music all goes, so like, spirit, some people hear it, some people fear it. Spirit, some people just won't go near it.
Right.
I'm sorry. That was there was no reason for that. I'm just killing time trying to think of an episode.
Yeah, it's got the 80s. You can't think of an episode if you're singing a bunch of songs.
I was thinking about ghosts.
Just name any episode of Voyager. Now you're just obligated to.
Now I have to. It's the one where, because he's all into the mushy stuff, it's the one
he
where...
He does love.
So I'll go back to the one where Chakotay and Janeway end up on that planet together.
And get all mushy.
Isn't that
get
what
all
you mushy. Just said?
No, I said the one where Janeway and Paris go faster. They go warp 10 and turn into salamander
Paris,
people.
Yeah.
Captain Janeway kissing Commander Chakotay.
Back like that one, because he's all into the mushy stuff, because he says that's what, you know, what, because apparently if you can stop wars with a mushy lovey-dovey kissy play.
Yeah,
you know, I would think that he was talking about like the perfect play can stop a war.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know that like media and entertainment and stuff, I think
the person writing this episode is, that's the classic writer writing about writing, is you end up with messages like, writing can save the world.
Yeah, right.
Which is not a point I necessarily disagree with.
No. And so what I'm saying is, like, in this situation of trying to stop an immediate war, no, I don't think he's going to write a play that's going to convince the Autarch to immediately stop a war. I think over time there can be an effect, but I don't know of any situation where a story has immediately convinced somebody to change, like, some kind of major action like a war. Like, it's not.
Well, I'm sure it's happened
happen
a lot, but it's probably looked down upon because people watch those stories and they're like, really?
Well, no. What I'm
for real?
What I'm saying is,
are you serious?
In real life, I don't think one story has prevented a war.
Is this real life?
I don't think one story has prevented a war, and I think if
you don't think the Goonies is what led to the downfall of the Soviet Union.
What I'm trying to say is it takes time. I think like it can have an effect over time. Yes, I think storytelling can have an effect over time, but like one story, you're not going to make some great play that's going to fucking do a bunch of awesome shit for the
world.
What
about a song?
And you
know, Back to the Future?
And you know, when you watch movies with like a really positive, powerful message, there's always going to be people on the other side who are like, that's just some bullshit, you know? So, you know, that's people always write off, even if it's a really introspective, or not introspective, but
interesting,
a really thoughtful play that reveals a lot of...
So you disagree
insight,
with
insight, insight.
You disagree a lot of with the thesis.
Even if something reveals a lot of, it's very insightful. Yeah. I think there's going to still, the people who still want to fuck shit up are still going to want to fuck shit up. Yeah. It takes time for to change people's minds.
Do you
want to
fuck shit up, Dan?
It takes time to change people's minds.
Do you want to fuck shit up, Dan?
Winter's Tears.
What about your play?
I knew you were going to, when I heard that, I was like, Winter's Tears.
Winter's Tears.
That's delightful.
The sudden reversal.
Well, yeah, so I guess you are disagreeing with the premise, and that, I think it's easy to disagree. Yes, when you put it in those terms, probably, yeah.
But
if you're putting it in terms of a society that has been depicted as being run with an iron fist by warlords, you really only have to convince, like, two warlords not to fight each other, I guess. It's not a convincing everybody. Yeah, it's just right. Convincing
yeah, I know. That, but I'm two people. I just don't think one play is going to change his mind. Like I said, it takes time for that kind of shit to happen.
We don't know enough about this warlord fella is part of the problem.
He
right?
does seem to be really into plays, though. Yeah. He's really,
specifically, he likes watching Voyager.
He was almost childlike looking at him, like, get all into the play.
I mean, it could work after maybe a few plays you could start.
That's what I'm saying, right. Yeah, over. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, right, exactly. Over time.
Yeah.
It could do that, but when that one part where he was like, he was saying like, "You almost had me going."
You almost had me going.
Slick.
When he was like,
"I almost believed you."
That part, yeah. They did some kind of meta playing there.
Well, yeah, that was the dude in the chorus.
Well, they turned it into meta playing.
Quick thinking from the guy in the chorus.
Because Lena was like, "War be damned! I'm a jilted lover, yeah. and I'm gonna ruin everything."
Jilted lover.
A bit disappointed.
Now, what I was confused about though is that like they established at that point like, oh, this was like they were meta playing there or whatever, mm-hmm. right? And the guy was like, "You almost had me going there." So they established that it supposedly was part of the play. Mm-hmm. But if you notice afterwards, the soldiers still like let her away afterwards as if he was like taking her away.
And it also
doesn't make sense.
And also it didn't make any sense. Yeah. Even from a meta perspective, it was like, no, this is clearly some bullshit.
Right. So the soldier, yeah, exactly.
So maybe the warlord fella not to break.
Well, it's like I'm saying, like the soldier's not going to lead. If you establish this part of the play, the soldier's not going to like lead you off like you're in trouble or something.
You'd think. Winter's Tears. It was interesting how long it took us to get to Voyager, Voyager in this episode.
Oh yeah, I was actually
like multiple breaks before
I wrote
even
that
see
down.
Voyager
it was about 15 minutes.
It's
kind
of like the podcast.
It was boom
ha
ha.
Oh wait. Skewered by our own co-host.
Are we still doing the fun-em-up?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if you're willing to, I don't know.
I've never stopped the fun-em-up.
Sorry, I didn't mean to fuck up the fun-em-up.
No, you just have refused to provide...
I did. It was
the Janeway.
That's
Chakotay.
Right. You gave that episode. I forget the title of that episode, but yes.
Did you ever notice that those people on Voyager, like the Voyager uniforms, got a lot looser?
The
officers on Voyager. I feel like their uniforms.
It's because they're starving because they don't have resources because
they're stuck in the Delta Quadrant. There's no authority to regulate their.
I mean. I don't think that the writers...
Neelix is serving crewmen to each other.
I don't think the writers wrote that in. I think it was like the TNG ones were ridiculously
eventually
tight.
Eventually, Neelix gets a fucking uniform himself.
I think the TNG ones were ridiculously tight, and they were like, we need to loosen these up a bit. Yeah. I think that's what happened.
All right. Well, we named our episodes. We named the episodes we think they would do next. We've moved on from that.
Okay.
15 minutes Voyager.
15 minutes into the episode.
And then we are introduced to both Janeway's concern over the loss of B'Elanna and Harry.
B'Elanna's on it. Harry Kim saves the day.
Young Harry Kim.
Young Harry Kim.
Young Harry Kim.
Harry Kim.
Young Harry Kim. Kim.
We are
live. Begin with Harry Kim.
We are likewise introduced to
Harry.
We are likewise introduced to the subplot of the sleepy Vulcan.
The sleepy Vulcan.
And it's funny because the setup to this joke is so serious. It's that Tuvok is so upset.
Right.
Unlike any other situation they've dealt with before, the fact that B'Elanna and or Harry are missing has so negatively impacted him that he's stayed awake for 10 full days.
10 days.
So it starts out with that sort of tragic motivation and then swiftly turns into like, it's funny when he falls asleep.
I know. It was a weird moment of levity because even like Paris, who was all super stressed out the whole episode, he was like, oh, he was like chuckling at one point.
He's
like,
this is hilarious.
Well, like he looks over at that other dude across the bridge.
Right. Yeah. They're all laughing.
Like the guy who's not Harry.
Right. And Paris was like, they were all really upset. And, you know, Paris was freaking out during that mission or that, not mission, meeting, whatever you call it, conference thingy. Yeah, it was an odd moment of silliness, but you know, it was ridiculous. That premise was a little silly, but it was kind of funny. Like
it was cute.
It was
tonally a little bit odd.
Yeah, it was. It was totally odd.
But of course, Tim Russ pulled it off very well.
Mm-hmm.
As you were.
That was kind of funny when he woke up. As you were like, that yeah, was, yeah. But it was funny.
Classic, because that's what you do. You're like, oh, I'm not asleep. I'm not asleep.
But it seemed
totally awake.
Right, but it seemed like kind of uncharacteristic of a Vulcan, which kind of made it funny. But it's also kind of like,
And of course, the extreme. You know, it's like, well, Vulcans can stay awake for 14 days. Mm-hmm. It's like,
that's what it is to be Vulcan.
But. Because Tim Russ is so great, because Tim Russ is basically the best Vulcan ever.
Yes,
he can pull off being the quote unquote unemotional, logical character. He can nevertheless pull that off, really, and seeming like he is that character while either being very serious or being very hilarious with such subtle changes to his facial expression and body and posture and all that other stuff.
He was on an episode of the Orville as well.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. And so was Marina Sirtis.
Yes, there are a lot of Star Trek alum have shown up along the way. Mm-hmm. Well spotted.
I know, it's a little more than tangential, but... Yes, Tuvok, Tim Russ plays the best Vulcan. Yes.
And they comment a little bit on that, not directly on Tim Russ, but that I did very much enjoy that scene with Kellis, right? Am I getting that right?
Yes,
Kellis. I feel like that's not his name.
It's K-E-L-I-S,
Kellis. No, I believe you, but it's weird. It doesn't sound right in the contours of my mouth. It doesn't quite sound right.
I'll show you something in the contours.
I'm sure you will, Dan, as usual. Every night, I get shown these things.
It's much better than all that kissing.
I mean, I'm not going to disagree. So
it just is.
Kellis is talking with that actor guy, and that actor guy is getting all frustrated because he's like trying to emote.
Yes, you could say that.
Because that guy is playing Tuvok, right?
Yeah.
And Kellis is like...
He's all worried that everyone's going to think he's a bad actor.
Yeah, exactly. But what was cool was they demonstrated this whole... It was like a director directing where he was trying to explain the motivation for Tuvok. And he did a great job. I mean, you referenced it earlier, Dan.
He did a great job. Sorry, that's not funny.
He did do a great job, yes.
Why was Lena all weird about getting close to him? Is it because she had such a crush on Kellis that, like...
I wasn't clear about that. Yeah. I was a little confused. Yeah. Almost it seemed like not only that she had she obviously had a relationship with Kellis, but she almost seemed repulsed by this other guy.
Yeah, I know. It was weird.
Was it just because they were doing some play, like some kissing in the scene?
Yeah, they were doing some kissing in the scene. But like still, like she's an actor and I don't know what the fuck she expected. But... Okay, I know that's dangerous. I just walked into some dangerous territory. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean what that sounded
know,
like.
We all know what you mean. It was just funny that on the one hand,
oh god, okay.
On the one hand, you had the respect and forethought to refer to her appropriately as an actor, as opposed to the now considered more archaic actress. Mm-hmm. You did that, and then you're like.
What did she expect?
Yeah, okay.
She knew what she was getting into.
It's a good point.
She knew what she was getting into when she signed them papers.
No, look, if you don't feel comfortable, even like it's not an excuse.
You gotta
that,
show a little skin for daddy.
Like just because you're acting, that's no excuse to like make someone feel uncomfortable. I want to make that very clear.
Yes, we know. But it was still funny. Yes.
It was so funny. It was surprising in that context.
Yeah,
that
one.
Because there was no explanation for why she would have felt uncomfortable.
Precisely.
In that
one would presume that, as far as we understand, this culture mirrors ours to some large degree, although they've just dressed him up with some combination of, looks, what is it, Jesse, sort of semi-Roman gear, Romanish, and then, weird heads.
The buildings were funny.
I enjoyed the building.
I liked that.
They were funny.
I liked the shot near the end, right before the play where we saw Kellis. It was like a bird's eye shot
of the little amphitheater.
Yeah, the amphitheater was cool. and the whole village around it. I was trying to figure out at what part like the set ended and whatever kind of overlay began, because I thought it was really it obviously didn't look like a real place, but
really
it,
nicely done.
Like the fact that he was walking around and like they did a good job blending all the elements.
I forgot to look up who directed this episode. Because it was a very well directed episode. There's a great shot right when B'Elanna has come into the village.
B'Elanna's on it
with her clever little hood, her little cloak, and she and Kellis are talking, and you see Lena walking in the background, completely blurred out, And she walks in slowly, and
she was naked. No, they had to blur it out.
No, it was a bokeh effect. And she walks in, and you see her shape. You see her blurry shape in between B'Elanna and Kellis, but far in the distance. Mm-hmm. She walks in, stops, stares at them for a while, and then walks on. And so that's one of your first...
Walks on, walks off. Walks on, walks off.
It's one of the first indicators.
Walks on, walks off.
It's one of the first indicators of her jealousy or of her concern.
Paint the fence.
Of her concern about this... new relationship, this new obsession.
Well, there
that Kellis had,
and obviously there was nothing between Kellis and Torres, but there were times they like near
there
the end
sparks.
They seemed a little sparkler, and I'm not talking about when she blew up that transceiver or whatever. Didn't it look like the whole room just fucking exploded?
Yeah,
and she didn't seem too concerned. She was like, I guess something got fucked up, but like,
yeah, it was all of a sudden, bam!
It's like everything blew up,
bam!
You'd think like everything would be toast after that.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, right. So
you mean Toast of London?
No, I don't mean that.
It's a good show, though.
No.
Dan hasn't watched much of Toast of London yet. He's a little too stressed out to get into it. But one day.
First, I have to be able to get through Snuffbox, and then I have to...
No. Snuffbox is way more stressful than Toast of London. Snuffbox is good, but Toast of London... I mean, Toast of London is tricky business, but it's good. You just gotta settle in. You just gotta let it do to you what it's gonna do.
I don't know if stress is quite the right word, but it is something about it. It's like hard to. It's arduous.
Is it because of when he dates the beekeeper?
I knew. That's the only thing that I remember so far from that show is the beekeeper.
The beekeeper.
The beekeeper.
Okay. Star Trek.
Isn't there anything else we can do?
Isn't there anything else we can do? There's all sorts of stuff we can do.
Isn't there anything else we can do?
So, okay, this whole conceit about the Eternals, which is partly funny because, you know, it was like the Marvel Eternals. But
it's funny, this whole idea of like these gods that you're supposed that you worship, yet you want to catch them and make them your servant somehow.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's
very old school.
Yeah. But at the same time, he kept telling her, like, he was like, I'm your servant, yet I'm fucking bound you up and caught you and are preventing you from leaving.
This was a story was very Shakespearean in a sense, sort of playful in the sort of playful comedy side of Shakespeare, where, yes, it's a fella who captures somebody he perceives to be a god,
right?
But in fact, they're just a more scientifically sophisticated person.
First of all, this is what we know about Eternals. They're called Eternals, so they must be able to live forever, right?
They may be perceived to live.
Well, forever. That's what I'm saying. What this village perceives Eternals as what defines an Eternal to them.
I'm just saying, you might call a team. You're like, your guys are a bunch of winners. That doesn't mean they win every time.
Okay, so they think that Eternals can live forever. They think that they have magic. She had medical equipment.
Medical
they were like
magic, yeah. Because he was bleeding her. He was slicing her up.
Right, and then
he thought she had hot blood, which I wasn't again.
Bleeding is the best way to treat it.
Yeah.
So there's that. Then they can apparently summon lightning because there's that one part where it was like in that episode. And
did you?
Yeah, and he was like, "Did you?"
Yeah.
So
she's all like, "Yeah, motherfucker."
So they live forever. They can heal people. They can summon lightning. They have apparently Kellis straight up says they have the power to make the ground open up and the sky to fall. So all these things are true, yet he doesn't seem that like worried that any of that's going to happen to him because I just tied her wrists up. You know what I mean? Like they can do all this crazy shit, yet he's so like gung-ho about cavalier, I should say, about like fucking capturing him and then the patron's going to catch him and send him to war. Yeah. Somehow they're going to like train them and keep them and send them off to battle.
But that's part of the characteristic. That's how this story is set up, is it has the flavor. And I'm not talking, not the play they're doing. It's like the Star Trek episode we're watching has the flavor of almost like a Grimm's fairy tale, right? Where you have a plucky hero type who does improbable things. There are some of the lesser known but more fun Grimm's fairy tales are things where like there's a guy who goes to a haunted castle where all the bravest knights never can stay the whole night to like, you know, because you get like the inheritance or whatever if you stay the night in the castle. All these brave knights don't don't manage it. And then this guy who's like dumb as a box of rocks goes in there and he just has a grand old time because he's just too stupid to realize how often his life is in danger. It's kind of like the Inspector Gadget gag, right? But there's a lot of stories that kind of have that flavor. And this has a bit of that flavor too, where it's like, this guy is so, he's so like sure of himself and he's so passionate about his art that he can capture a god.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and it's charming.
He's also kind of a hack, at least at first.
Well, that's the other thing that we don't get enough of in this episode is we don't know if this is the first time he's had an actually good play or a successful play, right? He has a patron. He has a job. He's being supported in whatever feudal sense for his presumed skill at writing plays.
You made a play out of our logs?
Winter's Tears, the sudden reversal.
So presumably he has sufficient skill. I could be wrong, but they didn't give us enough information to know which way this story was going, right? Because they could have had a setup that he's always failed and all his stories are stupid. This is his last chance. Like instead of it being the threat of war, it could have been the threat of I'm going to lose my job if I don't come up with something. And then he stumbles across the Voyager logs and it saves his ass. And then that's why he's motivated to kidnap her and keep her around, because he's like, I've never had another successful play. That the bones of that story are here, but that's not the story they told. It seems more like he was a perfect, he had plenty of ideas, but like now it's like this idea is really like caught on with his patron. And so he's like, okay, now that, you know, it's otherwise it's the same plot, but I don't know. It feels a little bit different than if they had told the original story where it was like, you're about to get fired.
Speaking of original, I want to know what the original ending was before, like, B'Elanna saved the day. They were all talking about, like, we can't use this ending.
Wasn't it that they were just going to find B'Elanna dead or something? And then...
Oh, yeah, that's...
That was implied.
That was implied. I thought that was kind of a joke on his part. Maybe he was, like, when he sent the letter, he was like, if you don't come, I'm going to kill B'Elanna. But maybe that he was serious.
He couldn't think of a different ending.
I'm wondering, I guess...
He's just one of those not thinking of a different ending kind of guys.
So, I was just wondering if that he was joking with her when he said he was going to kill her, or if that was the real ending that we were going to.
Joking, Lee.
What aren't you doing?
I'm not joking.
I'm not joking, Lee.
There we are. I'm not joking, Lee. Excellent. Well-oiled machine.
Gary Mitchell. Well, he was also like, so she fucked up Kellis in a couple ways. First of all,
are you talking about B'Elanna?
B'Elanna. She was like, the metal alloy is first she tried to get him to go to get dilithium.
Yeah.
Even though it could get him killed by the patron or the Artar.
Yeah, she was like, dilithium.
She's like, get that fucking dilithium. Yeah,
that's like hunting deer on the Winter's King's
Tears.
Land.
Right. And so she had him risk his life to get that. And he was like, okay. And then next she's like...
And real quick, it was again, very mythological, very Grimm's fairy tale that the thing that she needed was only available on the king's private cave.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a private cave that the king has.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, okay, that's awesome, but it's very archetypal.
And on the second thing she did is then she was like, well, I need this like metal alloy that and it has to have some gold with it. And he was like, oh, it's going to put me into debt. And she's like, you're going into debt. So she made him risk his life and she put him into debt.
Yeah, again.
She didn't give a fuck.
I didn't even think about that. This is another like myth thing or fairy tale thing where it's like the series of burdens or sacrifices that they... that this guy has to go through. You're right. That's funny. He captures a god who then turns around and makes him do all this fucked up shit. This is clever. It is an episode where it's a writer writing about being a writer, but it's well done. It's well crafted.
Well done.
Like one of them nasty old steaks they used to serve.
At where?
Just anywhere. Anywhere. You know, anywhere? Well done.
I used to serve. They
back
don't
in
serve
the day.
Them anymore?
No. It's not legal to sell to serve well done steaks.
You ever been to Golden Corral?
No, I don't do that anymore. No. I have been there, but I don't do that anymore.
I don't think I've ever actually been there.
That's a past life.
She was looking for 3 parts tin to 5 parts bronze,
with gold on one side.
And after all that was done, she was like, "This shit's not gonna work."
Yeah, he's like,
"This is not gonna work."
Well, you guys fuck
this
suck.
Shit. but was interesting. That didn't seem to faze him. He didn't seem to care. No. He's like, "I just went into debt, and this thing doesn't even." He didn't even comment on it. Like, which I thought was a little unbelievable that he like goes into debt. He goes through all this effort, and she's She's like, it's not going to work. And he didn't even say, oh, shit.
It's a video game. The princess is in another castle.
And yeah.
He's like, bring me this. No, it's not enough. Bring me this. No, you need to go to this other thing.
And then she brought up something about the Delaney sisters. And he wasn't even like, what are you talking about?
Was it that he had Harry making out with the Delaney sisters?
He says, why can't my play take the place of a war? And she's like, well, you're going to have to do a lot better than Harry Kim kissing the Delaney sisters. And his response was, why? He wasn't like, who the fuck are the Delaney sisters? Like,
because he knows about the Delaney sisters, and the Delaney sisters are a running joke, whereas it was always like Tom and Harry or whoever, like,
how much of their
going on dates on the holiday with the Delaney sisters?
How much of their Voyager data did he get? I mean, his transmissions or whatever. He couldn't have gotten that.
She was telling him stories.
He couldn't have known about the Delaney sisters.
Well, if she told him, she could have told him.
But she could have done anything. We didn't see her tell him, and there's no reason. There's no reason to assume that he would know who the Delaney sisters is. That the data he recovered would have anything on the Delaney sisters.
Dan, the logic here is he said Delaney or she mentioned Delaney sisters. Implying that because she said you're talking about the Delaney sisters kissing Harry Kim, so that means he's the one who wrote that.
She was
critiquing him writing that.
He didn't write that.
He did write that.
No, he didn't.
She said you're gonna have to think of something better than Harry Kim.
There was nothing him. There was nothing about him kissing the Delaney sister. She was just saying that as like you're gonna have to do a lot better than flooping the dupe when the zoop goes boop.
I took it to mean that's what he had in there.
I took it to mean she was hyperbolizing. That's what she was just coming up with.
I can tell you, Dan, I can see that. I don't think that, but I can see that.
Damn.
Do you know what's happening?
Is it time to go poopy?
It's time to take a break.
Permission to be relieved.
If you'd like to take a poop during the break, just let me know so I can pause the timer.
I'm going to go take a pee.
All right, so this guy's going to take a pee.
You're the one who's
leaving. Dan might take a poop. Regardless of the audience, you won't know any of that happened because I'm going to say we'll be right back.
Magic.
And then after we're back, there'll be a sound effect and then we'll be right back. So
let's go.
We will be right back. Okay. Are we back? Okay, we're back.
We're back.
No.
Everyone has evacuated whatever they needed to evacuate.
Ooh.
Bleeding is the best way to treat it.
Right. Were you talking about something, Dan? Were we interrupting something, or
he was done.
I was done talking about.
We
that.
Concluded.
What were we about? I think we were concluded with whatever.
I can't,
was,
I can't remember what we
his
had
point
done.
Was concluded.
What were we talking
concluded.
About?
Concluded. Isn't it ridiculous how quickly we forget?
I know it's actually kind of concerning.
It was too long of a break.
I'm not even like I'm
it
not
was
even
too much break.
I'm not even joking. Like, dude, it's so concerning. I can't remember. I'm like actually really a little bit weirded out by that. Like, I can't remember shit that happened a few minutes ago. I've got to.
Maybe it's because of the whole simulation.
Middle age.
Yeah. Some people are like, oh, we're in a simulation. Other people are not. We're not in a
supper
simulation.
Is over.
No, we're just middle age.
Check this sentence out by Paris.
I'll run a planet by planet search.
You think listen.
Planet by planet search.
Planet by planet.
Planet by planet. Planet by planet.
Isn't it funny how he says planet?
Yeah.
Yeah, the
planet.
And the
planet.
The
planet. Planet.
The second planet sounds different than the first.
I'll run a planet by planet search.
The first one is more like planet.
Planet.
Planet by planet search. Planet by planet search.
Planet. Planet.
Planet by planet. Planet.
It's the first. He's cutting in.
It's cutting in there.
I don't know. Isn't it like, yeah, of course you're going to do a planet by planet search.
How else would you search?
I mean, yeah, you also narrow things down.
She's not in
an inefficient plan.
Yeah. Yeah, there wasn't much 7 of 9 in this. There were references to 7 of 9. Did you enjoy how Kellis, his interpretation being interpreted by the, was it Lena, to play 7 of 9?
I, 7 of 9, am queen of the Borg.
7 of 9 is queen of the Borg.
7 of 9 is a Borg.
The Borg.
A B. The Borg. B.
The Borg.
A B. The Borg. A B.
A duck.
The Borg.
Yes,
I did enjoy the 7 of 9. To answer your question, I did enjoy their whole 7 of 9 situation.
Yeah, no, this is she wasn't in a lot of this episode, but you know, she was good. And then the reference to her character.
Yeah, the reference. I thought there was a reference to her was fun. Yeah,
Waymeyer. She did a great job. I thought. Yeah, and you know what was interesting when she was playing in the first play, Kelly Waymeyer was playing B'Elanna. And she sounded.
Alana's on it.
She sounded to me when she was acting out that role on that stage. She sounded like B'Elanna. And then later, when she was doing Seven of Nine, she sounded more like Jeri Ryan doing Seven of Nine.
Well,
when
she was well coached by that guy that wrote the play.
And the viper in her nest.
See?
Yeah.
I like.
Yeah,
play some Roxanne Dawson and then play that viper in the nest business.
Okay. How do I do that?
Something labeled B'Elanna.
I got a lot of stuff
Come
here.
On.
Is anything B'Elanna?
I'm sorry to disappoint you.
Now the viper in the nest.
I, Seven of Nine, am queen of the Borg. And the viper in her nest.
Okay.
Now do something else.
Yeah, play. Do you have something from the beginning of the episode?
Oh my God!
Jesus. I don't know. This is funny. Go on. Wait.
No, from
don't
the
be
play,
afraid.
Do you have anything from the place?
I can see I'm in good hands. Don't come back.
You wouldn't dare. I don't have that kind of magical power.
Enough.
From the play where Lena is playing B'Elanna in the whole initial part of the episode, which gets the whole story started because the budget Andy Richter. Is all delighted and he's like, I want another one of these. But that play, B'Elanna was the main character and was being played by Lena.
Yeah, I don't know if I actually have anything.
You may not. I thought if I kept talking, it would give you the opportunity.
All I have is the second stuff where she's like,
surprised, say nothing. You too will be assimilated.
Yeah, that's the more. Do you have Seven of Nine stuff? Jeri Ryan, Seven of Nine?
I don't.
I mean, you don't got it. If you don't got it, don't worry.
I just have this.
An inefficient plan.
That's all I have from that on this episode.
Yeah, I guess she wasn't.
She wasn't featured a lot in this episode. Speaking of the Borg, Kellis was talking about how he was talking to Torres, and he was like, "That sounds terrifying." Captain Janeway hasn't been able to destroy them, referring to the Borg, obviously. Yeah. And then B'Elanna's like, "She is a Starfleet officer trained to avoid violence whenever possible. She would make peace with the Borg if she could." First of all, she got needlessly frustrated in that sentence. I thought she was getting really frustrated. How was he supposed to know that?
She is, you know, she's part Klingon.
Yeah, and she's known to have like a bit of a temper.
She doesn't suffer fools gladly.
And second of all, it's not ridiculous to think that Starfleet would want to destroy the Borg because, like, in fact, you know, there was an episode where Picard and crew had a chance to destroy the Borg entirely.
I was hoping that this would come
with the computer virus.
I walked right into that bullshit.
I was waiting patiently
with a computer virus.
Jesse, you cottoned onto that way quicker than I did.
And if he didn't do it, I was going to bring it up myself.
They were going to destroy the Borg with a computer virus. But
new listeners, Dan is always bringing up I Borg.
Picard put us.
We've never discussed it. The algorithm has never asked us to discuss it.
And now it works out that we talk about it like once a week.
We talk about it frequently because of this guy.
Picard put a stop to it because he didn't believe in genocide, even for the Borg. But there are the thing is, and Janeway Janeway may be along those. It sounds like she's probably agrees with Picard. But there are probably tons of other Starfleet officers who would have had no problem going through with that.
No compunction at all.
In fact, the idea of not destroying them seemed like a radical, if reasonable, approach.
Radical. You remember in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I'm not done with a thought yet. You can do that afterwards,
all right,
please.
All right.
I mean, I'm not telling you what you can and cannot do, but please.
We'll put
a little
footnote. We'll put a little number one. And
the
then
idea.
Later,
the
I'll be like, radical.
The point is that he makes it seem like it's like she makes it seem like it's unreasonable that a Starfleet officer would want to destroy the Borg. But the whole crux of the episode of I, Borg was that a lot of people thought it was a good idea to destroy the Borg. And Picard and obviously Janeway now, they both don't believe in that. So his assertion
about Janeway. But
so his assertion wasn't that off base. And she and B'Elanna was making an assumption about like that. Well, she tried to make peace if possible. Well, and the way B'Elanna talks, we can assume that B'Elanna knows a thing or two about Janeway. And we can sort of assume that Janeway would probably.
But
it's not true that there's a Starfleet officer. So they would always make peace.
I agree,
we've established that the Starfleet, due to the presence of all the evil admirals in Starfleet, that they're not
the
perfect.
The bad admirals. But you could also take what B'Elanna was saying as being, look, if she could, she would make peace, but she can't, so she's gonna fuck them up.
You made you sound like a Shatner. You were like, but she. I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna do a Shatner.
I don't think
impression.
I sound like Shatner.
You were like, she does, but she can't, and she did. That's how you sounded, which is like what Captain Kirk sounds like.
Man, every now and then you toss out a cadence that makes me really uncomfortable. And I don't know why. I don't know why.
You don't know why it makes you uncomfortable, or why I do it.
Going like, bad.
I know why. I know why you do it.
It got the bed in the bed, and she goes.
That sounds just like Shatner.
Yeah, that's my impression of Captain Kirk. Beam me up,
Scotty.
No, they never actually say "beam me up, yeah, Scotty" in an episode of Star Trek. Yeah, not many people know that. Yeah. Not many people know that.
Nobody knows that. Milana's on it.
Milana's on it.
I think everybody knows that now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What were you saying? What did you say before I got distracted, Patrick?
Before you got distracted. You mean before you distracted all the rest of us?
They mentioned the Borg, and then Kellis is like, it's like an insect colony. Yeah. And then B'Elanna's like, yeah, they even have a queen. Which is interesting, because the Borg started out as some leaderless collective of equals.
They were
and
it better turned, back then.
And it turned into an insect colony.
I'm not into the Borg queen.
But the thing is they don't have like worker Borgs and fighter Borgs still, though. They have a queen, but all the Borgs are still equal. Like, they don't have classes of Borgs now or anything.
Yeah, well, yeah. Or and again,
like an insect colony would.
A lot of the what do they call it? The bee cannon or whatever, you know.
The beak keeper?
You know, like books and other things like that. Mm. The Borg, I think, are a little bit more differentiated, mostly because without the restrictions of having to depict these characters on a television budget. In the books, they do differentiate the Borg more because they have all these crazy aliens. There's gas aliens and there's robot aliens. Like
gas aliens. Are you talking about like the different gremlins and gremlins too? How there's an electric gremlin?
Yeah, there's like
spider
gremlin. There's a lady gremlin.
Yeah, there's a lady gremlin.
And a Hulk Hogan.
There's a Hulk Hogan. There's a Hulk Hogan there.
Tears open the screen, starts yelling at the audience.
Yeah. Great movie.
It is.
It's one of those.
It really is. It's like an anti-corporate gremlin. Gremlins 2 is like a pretty brilliant anti-corporate black comedy.
And when I think of sequels like that are just totally like wacky and they take the original concept concept and get like really wacky, it's most of the time it's bad. Most of the time when they get wacky with a movie's theme in the sequel, like it just kind of sucks and it doesn't feel like the movie. Gremlins does it successfully somehow. Somehow like it's totally batshit.
It's a totally different story.
It's crazy and weird and more humorous than the first one.
And it's got Robert Picardo is in it.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. But the first one,
he makes out with the lady gremlin.
The first one is comedic, but it's also kind of scary.
It's
at
a part. Christmas horror.
Yeah, with some comedy in it. But the second one is just a straight up comedy, really. You know. And then that's smart gremlin too.
Yeah.
You knew he was smart because he talked like this.
Wasn't it Tony Bennett? Tony, what's his name? You know, he was the guy.
Tony Danza?
No, it was not Tony Danza. Tony Danza was not playing the smart gremlin. No, sorry, Mr. Danza, but no. Angela. All right.
Radical.
Yes, thank you.
What were you saying that I was
silly
like
digression.
Said you sounded like Captain Kirk when you said it, but you didn't?
I don't remember because I didn't sound like Captain Kirk at the time.
You said something.
I didn't say nothing.
You said something.
I was saying nothing.
Well, I mean, I might have misinterpreted how you sounded, but you were saying something.
Well, I will tell you one thing that I did want to mention was how after the initial play, which was successful, they got paid a little rock or something.
That
budget Andy Richter pulled out of that lady's breasts out of her shirt.
Her breasts?
He reached into her cleavage.
He said breasts. That's how they say it.
In New Zealand, they say breasts.
They say breasts.
Breasts, you get in the shit.
Breet.
You go in the shit.
Breet. Did you ever see that Flight of the Conchord show?
Yes.
He's all like, breet.
Breet.
Breet. Her breasts.
The actors get the it wasn't a coin. It looked like a little rock.
I think it was a jewel or something.
Yeah, jewel, rock, whatever it was.
He's like, eat this.
But they seemed happy. They seemed to think it was cool to get. That meant that we're being pleased.
I mean, you knew it had to be valuable because it was hanging around like the queens or whatever.
Well, it didn't seem to be attached to anything. She just carries loose gems in her cleavage, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean,
he just reached into her cleavage and plucked out a loose gem. It's crazy.
Yes.
But Kellis, you know, gives them the good news that he really liked it, but that he wants another one in a week. And then Lena comes up to him and is all like, hey, do you want to fuck?
And she did say that.
And he's all like, no, I'm too busy. I got to like write another play. And I was like, that's another stereotypical thing for a writer writing about writing to put in is like, look, this hot lady wants to fool around with me, but I'm so passionate about my art. It works here. Again, all this stuff works, but it goes right up to the fucking border for my taste. I think that it crystallizes into something that's very enjoyable and well acted and well performed, but it's close to being like, no.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. The other thing that I noticed that I thought was funny was the Delta Flyer, when it was crash landed, you know, they kept filming it as if it was sideways at like 45 degrees. You know, you see it on the side of the mountain when they're walking around it, they're all sort of standing all goofily. But the guy put all those candles in it and all the candles are pointing, they're pointing straight up. So it's like, it's clearly not at an angle. Right. You know? It's just really,
I didn't notice
it
that.
Really stood out to me that the candles are like pointing straight up from the candles, but like they were at an angle to the camera.
I didn't even
in
notice
a way that,
that
didn't make sense.
Good eye. I didn't notice that.
Good eye.
Voyager.
What was that?
Shining Voyager, far from home, far from the gleaming cities of Earth.
Yeah.
There was one, I think, that said Delta Flyer in it.
A wave as high as a mountain struck the Delta Flyer.
Yeah. That was the one. They got caught in spatial eddies. Apparently they're spatial eddies.
Yeah. I was trying to make a joke about like with a different name, like Spatial Ricks.
Spatial.
Or Spatial Steves.
Spatial Bobbies.
But that doesn't really work.
No.
Spatial eddies.
No, it doesn't work.
It was a MacGuffin.
Spatial Clearance.
Shining Voyager, far from home.
The names of the plays she had, that he had, there was...
The Away Mission of Belana Torres.
Yeah, now, it's funny because Away Mission, when we hear it like all the time on Star Trek, it doesn't sound weird at all. It's like, yeah, they're on Away Mission, whatever. But when you make it this sort of grand title, it sounds kind of silly. It's like the Away Mission, you know, it's like we're away.
They're going away.
They're going away. It just sounds...
What are they doing?
Where are they going?
It just sounds very
They've gone and gone away.
It sounds like slight or something in a certain way. But then they made the other one...
The Rescue of Belana Torres.
So,
yeah.
He needs a third one. Maybe they don't do trilogies there.
Threshold.
Did you find Belana Torres?
Blana. He says
did
Blana.
Find Belana Torres?
Blana.
Did you?
It just is.
What's going on? You just have like little bits and pieces of sound.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I do that. Because I heard a little squirt. Like, okay, here's the full one.
It just is.
At the beginning, there's a squirt.
It just is.
Let me play it short.
Yeah.
It's a little squirt.
It just is.
What is it?
It's a squirt.
Of what?
Of...
Do you have any audio games like Guess the Audio?
No Guess the Audio this week. I just have a bunch of the group speak guys. I have Paris saying...
Planet by Planet Search.
I like that.
Okay, we got
Kellis. This is no way to end a play.
Is that right? Is that Roger the alien from Family Guy?
It does kind of sound like it.
This is no way to end a play.
It doesn't make sense.
It'll have to. This is no way to end a play. It'll have to.
Yeah, I don't. I've got not much fun in the way of sound at this point in the game.
Yeah,
I know. Here's some background dialogue.
Batman dialogue.
I think this is near the end. This is
Batman.
This is some background dialogue.
Who are the enemies of Voyager? The Borg.
The Borg.
I didn't hear that one. And then he also goes to one of them starts saying species 8 7 8 4 7 8 6 7 5 3 0 9.
Yeah.
Are the enemies of Voyager? The Borg.
I love when I hear like the background stuff. It's happened a few times. There was one episode, I think it was Picard, where they were in that. It was the late last season of Picard, where they were in that
season 3 of Picard,
where they were in that that planet with all the debauchery. And I think there was some
they in the planet or on the planet.
And they were, and we heard some aliens talking some alien language, and I remember playing it, and you were like, "I don't like that," because they were going like "gapa goopa goopa" or something like that, and it made Patrick feel uncomfortable.
You know, I'm easily made to feel uncomfortable. And I don't necessarily dislike that. Sometimes discomfort is just what the doctor ordered.
There was that one time that...
Doctor!
There was that one time where Spock made that farting noise. I think it's...
Was that in the very short treks?
Yeah, it was.
Was that the one with the boogers?
Yeah, I think so. That's not what I meant. I was trying to find an old one. I think it's this one.
But there seems to be little choice.
Was that?
I can bring you another five.
That was in. Was that?
But there seems to be little choice.
That wasn't All Our Yesterdays. That was the other one, the OK Corral one.
Yeah, I think so. We're kind of like dragging our feet a little. I guess we should talk about something else. Right?
Oh no, we can close down the podcast.
Is it time for that?
Well, it's time to ask. Are there any remaining topics to go over?
Kellis sent off that dude to meet with B'Elanna and in the Delta Flyer, and he's like, "Don't be scared." And it's like, "Yeah, right. Of course he's gonna be scared."
What yeah, kind of and he was. That guy looked terrified. He was like, "What the fuck is this?"
Yeah, really. It was.
And he shakily handed her the note.
Oh, they were doing. So you were talking about what's it called? The opening with all the group guys talking, the Greek
chorus.
Yeah.
Then they also had like not a soliloquy, but like the talking at the audience thing. You know,
like where they're monologue.
The monologue. I guess it's a monologue.
It's a monologue.
They were both like
surprised.
They're doing that thing. That's like not a Greek thing. That's like a Shakespeare thing, which probably comes from something else. Right?
Well, this is very Shakespearean as well, both in the play and the structure.
Everything comes from Shakespeare.
The structure of it.
I don't know.
Lots of words come from
it. That part where they start talking at the audience, I was like, that kind of made me feel a little like creepy crawly. I don't know. Yeah. I wasn't into that part.
It's a narrator.
Yeah,
it's
I just, know.
It's presented in a, it's a weird way because it's always like, you got to have three of them, right? Three of them, they all talk at the same time and it's going to weird the fuck out of people.
Yeah. It's weird. Well,
you could just have one person.
Sometimes they're going to make funny animal noises.
Well, yeah. I'm not talking about the chorus. I was talking about like when she was like, when they were like,
oh, you mean when
surprised? Tell her nothing.
Like they were talking at the audience. Like when there was first, it was Lena was saying like, "I'm a Borg," and she doesn't even know it. And then like Lena comes up and is like, "I know she's a Borg," you know.
Yeah.
And then at one point she was all like,
"I got you. I get where you're going."
Yeah. At one point she was like,
"Say nothing, or you too will be assimilated."
She's talking to the audience when she said that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, if we're playing the game of talking to the audience and acknowledging that the audience...
That's what we're doing right now.
If you're playing the game of talking to an audience and acknowledging that the audience exists, you said, say nothing to the audience.
Say nothing.
Or you'll be assimilated. What if at that point, one of the audience members was like, "Ah, no, I don't want to be assimilated." Like, what if some... what if the audience member...
You mean if they misunderstood?
Well, no, what if they were told to say nothing and they wanted to thwart her plans... And she was like, "Don't tell them. Don't tell."
Oh, you mean the audience? The actor tells the audience.
Okay, here. Okay. Let me just say.
I'm just looking for clarification of this scenario, so I know how to.
The character Lena was
think about it
when Lena was playing Seven of Nine.
Okay.
She's talking to the audience. She's like, "I am a Borg. Don't tell." Who was Tannis playing? She was playing. Janeway, was that?
Probably Janeway.
Yeah. So she was like, "I'm Seven of Nine, the Borg. Don't tell Janeway." She's looking at the audience. She's like, "Audience, don't tell Janeway that I'm Seven of Nine. I'm a Borg. Don't tell her, or else you'll be assimilated too."
Yeah.
What if at that point in time, one of the audience members was like, "Hey, Janeway, that's a Borg over there."
So your question basically is how do we think they would react to hecklers?
Yeah, right. You know, because that's, you're already acknowledging that. Well, it's even more than a heckler, because you're telling the audience.
It's a troll heckler.
It's like if a heckler is simply just speaking out of turn. But like if the audience, we're playing the game of the audience exists in this world.
Yeah.
And so the audience yes-ands them doesn't yes-and them, but says like.
Sit there silently as an audience ought.
But if the audience was then told Janeway, the character of Janeway, that's a Borg. So they'd have to, Janeway's, the character of Janeway would have to yes-and the audience. Mm. And Janeway would have to be like, how would you go on with your play as if the audience member hadn't said that? She would have to then, they'd have to alter their play and improv on the spot and say, "Oh my gosh, you're a Borg." You see what I'm saying?
So like 2 points.
If you're establishing the audience exists and then the audience like is like, "Hey, that's a Borg," and gives away the secret, they can't just move on with the play as if that didn't happen.
A couple of points here that I'm going to push back on. First of all, you are setting up a scenario where we have a recalcitrant obnoxious audience. That's certainly plausible. That could happen. In this case, it didn't happen. Maybe it's because the warlord's there.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course it didn't happen. Maybe I'm just saying,
most people just follow the social conventions where they don't want to disrupt the play.
And I'm saying, what if somebody did? They were relying on the social assumptions as
all actors in all plays that go on today. And throughout all time, this is something that this what if could apply to any play, first of all.
No, not if they don't acknowledge the audience. If they don't acknowledge the audience, then they could move on as if it didn't happen.
But if they're commanding
the audience not to do something and the audience disobeys, you can't simply move on from the play from
See,
there.
That's where I disagree with you, because I do think that traditionally you would simply ignore the audience and continue, because everyone understands that the speaking to the audience is a narrative conceit.
Yes.
And not a literary. Not a literal transaction of information.
I think it ruins some of the immersion when you do that.
Of course, if an asshole stands up in the audience.
No.
And maybe they would be swift enough on their feet to improvise something.
Less immersion would be lost had they not addressed the audience. Yeah. It's a risk to address the audience, because if they fight back, then it's harder to move on than if they hadn't acknowledged the audience at all in the first place. That's all I'm saying.
I get you.
They're making an assumption about social convention, and what if they fucked up?
I get you.
But I guess their life would just go on.
Probably wouldn't be a big deal. Maybe somebody would get executed. Again, we don't know.
Maybe somebody would just get executed.
We don't know enough about this culture. Now, echoing, one of our listeners, Stephen Schwartzoff, he wrote a little while back about, after we did TNG's Homeward, about how interesting it would be to come visit that planet, many decades or centuries later.
Oh, yeah,
to see how they were impacted by being moved. I would ask that same question here, which is, I can tell you're impressed, Dan.
This is the way you delivered that.
Let me tell you, I would ask that question right here.
Not bad.
Yeah, when we're talking about these people, I would ask that question, which is, would it be interesting to see how they are impacted in the future? Now,
that's kind of a strange question.
Because it wasn't a question at all. That was a statement.
No, my question is, what would they be like? How would this contact, because there's at no point is the Prime Directive brought up in this episode. It is not considered. There's no talk of
I didn't even think about Balana. It watching the episode.
I know, right? It's because this episode is set up in such a mythic arc way, it's removed any of the regular constraints we have.
Yeah, she transported in front of him. That's got to be a violation.
She went into the village.
And she did it for dramatic effect. She didn't even do it because she had to.
She went into the village just to hang out.
She did it to make the guys play better, which helped him. But at the end, I think she could have...
Yes.
I think he could have been fine if she hadn't done that.
And she was telling him details, even if they were couched in metaphor, she was telling him details about being a god.
Yeah, right.
flying through the sky in a shiny silver ship. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't come up. It doesn't come up at all, because this is a mythic...
Say nothing.
Yeah, mythic story. So anyway, I don't know. I just thought it's interesting to me that... that none of that was part of this tale.
Mm-hmm. It's too much stuff to fit in.
Yeah. I mean, again, it was a highly creative concept. And I think part of what makes it work is that they did just go full steam ahead and they crafted this story in a way that makes it work.
Mm-hmm.
There was the risk they could have gone some other direction and not done that, but...
bleeding is the best way to treat it.
Yes, it is indeed.
Harry Kim had to walk 200 kilometers, which at 5 kilometers per hour. I think that
she was there for a couple weeks or something?
It would have taken just a week. It would have taken him approximately 40 hours to walk all that way.
Well, that's not so bad.
He could only go through night. So that means it had to have taken at least 4 or 5 days. And that probably some of that walk was pretty difficult. So
it was super exciting to see him pop up.
Yeah, and then she was all like...
Harry?
And he just happened to have what she needed. Harry saves the day.
Harry saves the day.
Yeah. Okay, any other bits and bobs?
I knew you'd come.
Flips and flobs.
Fleebs and floobs.
Bloobs and bloobles.
Larbs and darbs.
Larb is... Have you ever had a larb?
I have. Isn't that Thai?
Laotian, isn't it?
Or is it Thai? I thought it was Thai. Is it Thai? It's pretty spicy, if I remember correctly.
Maybe it's both.
They were all
could be either next to each other.
They were all like, the 38th time might be the charm, and it was. Do you think it was really 38 times?
Was this for the planets?
That was when they were trying to turn on their transceiver, like her and Harry. Oh, they were like, 38th time is the charm.
I got
and it was the charm. And we don't know why.
Television.
Yeah,
it was a
38's a cute number.
No, it's a pretty good episode. I was into that episode.
I've already extolled my what I think are the virtues of the episode, but I also wanted to if I didn't make this clear earlier, when I'm watching this episode, I kept thinking I was going to be bored. I didn't really remember it. I'd seen it years ago, but this is not an episode I really remember.
Some of these sort of odd episodes, like the Star Trek the TOS episode where we just talked about, where they went down to like the Old West area on that weird planet, and they were the OK Corral one, like these kind of odd sort of like, or like a Fistful of Data's, like these kind of off kilter, not that they're Western, those just happen to be Western,
and we haven't done a Fistful of Data's,
but just these sort of like off kilter goofy episodes, they can be real hit or miss if they don't get it just right.
They're conceptual, right?
And I'm glad they brought,
they're like high concept episodes,
and I'm glad they kept Voyager like coming back every once in a while, because to sort of anchor you home to what you're watching.
I agree, and it's it is a high concept episode. I didn't really remember it much, and I kept being worried that I was going to get bored, but I didn't get bored. I was along for the ride the whole time. And because I think they were successfully leading your nose in one direction, but then like kind of going a little bit of a different direction. So they still stuck to the structure, the sort of hero's journey structure that they were trying to mimic both within and as part of the episode, but also keeping things a little bit surprising because it wasn't doing exactly what you might think it was going to do at any given moment. So that was fun.
That's much better than all that kissing.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
It's better than all that kissing.
Okay. I guess I think that does it for that particular episode. Next week, normally we would be saying we don't know and we were going to school up Dan's algorithm. But next week, in preparation for Voyager Season 5, we will be doing those four short treks.
1 week.
And again, that's Runaway, Calypso, The Brightest Star, and The Girl Who Made the Stars.
One week.
Runaway is where Tilly comes across an interesting character who then shows up on Discovery later.
Yes!
Calypso takes place in the distant future, and it's a very interesting
10 days.
Very interesting episode. The Brightest Star focuses on Saru. It's sort of like a prequel, providing some of Saru's background. And then The Girl Who Made the Stars is one of those animated ones. We already discussed Ephraim and Dot, but we haven't discussed this one yet. And that one centers on Michael Burnham.
Why not?
As a child. It's also sort of a bit of a prequel there, and I think probably quite appropriate to remind ourselves of these stories as we're going into the fifth
season. Now take that knife of yours and cut me free. Cut me free and I'll tell you.
The final season of
Winter's Tears. The sudden reversal.
Star Trek Discovery. So that's what we'll be watching next week. So you all got to watch that in the intervening time so you can catch up with that.
Just the ending I was looking for.
I was on Unplanned Trek. Everyone should go listen to that. I was on one of their Patreon things.
Nicely done.
Their Patreon, Unplanned Trek, has the most awesome Patreon. Such a clever idea where they're discussing Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, 1 minute at a time.
Yes.
Now the actual discussions, our discussion, I think, lasted about 30 minutes. But so they're at minute 53. So I think there's been 53 episodes on their Patreon where they have these, 10 to 20, 30 minute discussions of just 1 minute at a time.
One minute at a time.
To join them for one of those. So that's worth checking out.
The privilege of your touch.
I forget which episode we just, I don't know. We watched a good episode. I can't remember because my brain's melting.
Nicely done.
Go to the Unplanned Trek podcast feed or go to their YouTube feed and you can.
Yes.
You'll see my face on there somewhere. I don't know.
Yes, you can.
I don't know. You just watch all their stuff and then I'll occasionally, I pop up on that thing occasionally. So go do that. Patreon. Go to our Patreon / It's Got Star Trek. Check it out. Social media.
Why not?
Social media at It's Got Star Trek at all the relevant social media places, YouTube and Facebook and all that other jazz. And what else? So yeah, feedback at itscottstartrek.com.
I don't have that kind of magical power.
Is the email. www.itscottstartrek.com is the website.
And I told you not to.
And it's got StarTrek.com/record if you'd like.
Want to give it a try?
Leave us a voice message. So there it is. That's all the obligatory stuff we got to do.
That's it?
Yes, that's all. That's it. That's all she wrote. That's what we do at the end of these podcasts.
1 week.
Okay. Yes, that's right. Thank you, Dan. Yes, 1 week until we're back.
Dismissed.
In your ears. And with that, we wish you a good week. And we'll talk to you again later. Bye-bye.
Supper is over.
Tuvok. Tuvok.
As you were.